As I have described in previous episodes, a large credit for the idea for this podcast, Peace Love Moto, is due to the Distinguished Gentleman's Ride, an international fundraiser for men's health issues focused on prostate cancer research and suicide prevention. I described how this event is attended by men and women all dressed up in dapper outfits, all with a common heart for raising money and awareness for these important issues that impact thousands of men throughout the world. I also mentioned that this past year, I was honored to be the host of the Distinguished Gentleman's Ride event in Fort Collins, Colorado. There, I met people with hearts the size of our Colorado mountains. One such person is our guest today. Not only was Doug Logston the first place winner for fundraising at our Fort Collins event, I also learned that Doug is one fascinating guy, including being the state director of the Motorcycle Sport Touring Association. It's my joy today to present to you my interview with my new friend, Doug Logston. Stay tuned.
Recorded in beautiful Loveland, Colorado, welcome to Peace Love Moto, the podcast for motorcyclists seeking that peaceful, easy feeling as we cruise through this life together. Are you ready? Let's go.
Well, we are so excited today at the Peace Love Moto podcast to be hearing from my new friend, Doug Logston, who I met only this past summer, but I realized really early on when I met Doug, this is a fellow I'm going to want to get to know. Not only was he a very, very kind heart participating in our Distinguished Gentleman's Ride, but has a very interesting background as well, and is an expert motorcyclist, and we'll hear all about that. So, Doug, thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, my pleasure, Ron, but I must confess, some of those accolades you laid on me, I don't know that I would describe myself that way, but thank you for the introduction.
Well, let's talk about it and see how that goes. Okay. Well, hey, Doug, let's just start. You know, I've shared with you, and you've heard probably a few times, you know, my beginning in this whole motorcycle thing, that I was introduced to this sport and the love and the passion for motorcycling with a documentary. It was the Bruce Brown film of On Any Sunday that I saw as an 11-year-old kid, and managed to get a mini bike after that. Somehow, as a miracle happened, where my parents got me a mini bike, and it's been up and down hills and around corners ever since. But tell me, how did you get started in this sport and this passion of motorcycling?
Well, thank you. I always liked riding my bicycle when I was young, and that was basically my mode of transportation to go visit friends, go to the store, go to the rec center, or whatever the case may be. My first experience with motorcycling was 1962. I was probably about 11 years old, and the neighbor next door, his name was Frank Lee, and he was a Seattle fireman. He was also a hunter, and He came home one weekend. He'd been out hunting. My dad was curious. I was curious, so we went over to look, and lo and behold, he had packed his deer out from the backcountry using a motorcycle. In fact, it was a Honda Trail 55.
Oh, my goodness.
I had never seen a Honda Trail 55. I didn't know motorcycles came that small, because the motorcycles that I had seen at that time were the cruiser style, whether it was Indian or Harley Davidson or something of that nature. They were big and heavy and powerful. And here was this motorcycle I thought I could almost sit on and operate. Well, I didn't get to, but I did badger Frank into taking me around the block, and I was just thrilled. I really was. That sensation, he threw a boat cushion on the back rack, and I sat on that, and I hung on to him, and he was doing all kinds of tight figure eights, and I was shocked at the acceleration and how quickly it came to a stop. And so, you know, The ride didn't last more than 5 or 6 minutes, but I was absolutely thrilled with motorcycling.
Oh, that is cool. That is cool. A real life experience that way. And I'm just trying to imagine how this guy was balancing this deer, did you say?
Well, he had bought the motorcycle because he was tired of packing his game out on the back of a horse. And so then he had purchased this motorcycle, and that's what he packed his deer out to the road where they could, you know, load everything up into a truck and come home. But no, when I rode it, it was just Frank and myself on the bike, not the deer as well.
Oh, okay. Right. That would be a trick. Yeah. Yeah. Well, go ahead.
I was just going to say, so then I started reading motorcycle magazines, and whether it was Cycle World, I think Motorcyclist was being published back then in the 60s. And I was just always interested in motorcycling. Summer of 1966, I was 15. We traveled from Seattle to Nebraska to visit friends and relatives. And we stopped at a dear friend's farm. And he happened to have taken a 1965 Honda Super 90 in trade for labor. He had helped his farm neighbor, whether it was planting crops or whatever, and did not have cash. So he gave Vern White, our friend, this very red 1965 Honda Super 90. And Vern said, "You want to try it out?" And I said, "Sure." And so he showed me how to, well, where the gear shift lever was, where the throttle was, the brakes, all that good stuff. And I went around the farm yard a few times, and he said, "All right, it looks like you're doing good." So he opened the gate, and I went out into his 160-acre field and played there until the thing ran out of gas. And that was again an absolute thrill. And I had been reading these magazines. I knew where the controls were. I knew how they were supposed to operate. But this was my first chance to actually do that. And I was absolutely enthralled, and rode it until it ran out of gas. And at the time, I didn't realize it. It just quit on me. So now I'm going, oh my, you know, I broke it. What's... So I push it back into the farm yard, and I'm apologizing to Frank. Or I'm sorry, to Vernon. I said, I think I broke it. I'm not sure what I did. And so I got off it, and he grabbed a hold of the handlebars, and he shook the bike back and forth. And he said, "I don't hear anything." So he unscrewed the gas cap, looked in it, and said, "Well, son, you ran it dry." And he said, "You want to go again?" And I said, "Sure." My mother stepped in and said, "I think that's enough motorcycling for one afternoon." And that was that. And I didn't actually get my first motorcycle until the summer of 1970. I was 19 years old. Uh-huh. And it was a Honda CB, Honda 305 Scrambler. Uh-huh. And that was my first one, and thoroughly enjoyed it, and rode it back and forth to the University of Washington. It was cheap transportation, and very enjoyable transportation. And consequently, I've stayed with it. Motorcycling has become my absolute favorite mode of transportation. Mm. And I've done it since 1970.
Oh, that's wonderful. Isn't it interesting how, and I'll bet you've experienced this too, where, you know, you had that first experience as a kid where you go out on the bike and you're probably coming back with lots of smiles, and you clearly ran it out of gas because you were just out there trucking along and just having a ball, just like I did. But you know, there's those folks too. It seems like that they'll, you know, go down the street or whatever and say, "Oh, that was nice," and then just move on with life and never get on a bike again. But it just seems like there's something that it's up to the individual. Maybe it's the way we're made up. I don't know. But you have any thoughts on that? I mean, I'm sure you have friends that don't ride and don't care mm-hmm. to ride. But
mm-hmm. Yeah, very true. And they get tired of me talking about motorcycles.
me too.
Why do we ride? I mean, there's a lot of people that have written very eloquently about why we ride motorcycles. For me, it was the early on, it was the wind in my face. Well, now I wear a full face helmet, but I like the responsiveness of the motorcycles. They go and they stop quickly. They turn. You can change direction easily with them. I like being able to pass slow-moving traffic as you're going up a mountain pass. I just, the leaning into the turns, setting an appropriate entry speed to the turn, and then so that you can roll on the gas through the turn and then exit. I enjoy that. I really and truly do. They are, and by and large, the vast majority of motorcycles really truly are high performance vehicles, and I enjoy that. I enjoy that as well.
You had mentioned to me when we met at the BMW Triumph shop, I was getting my bike maintenance, and you agreed to meet me out there. We just had the nicest visit. I believe you were telling me how you originally wanted to be a race car driver.
That's right. Yeah, you got a good memory. That was my dream, and I got a chance to exercise that dream. I went to Formula One racing school. Actually, it was Formula Ford, but it's a stepping stone up to the larger classes. And that was in Colorado, I should say, in California, 1977, 1978. And I performed well enough in the initial entry of that class, which was held at Ontario Motor Speedway, in Ontario, California. Well, it was a really cool speedway. The speedway was patterned after the Indy 500 oval, but on the interior of the track, they had a 3.2 mile, 19 turn road course. And so that's what we practiced on in Formula Fords, and they were four-cylinder, 1600cc engines with a four-speed Hewland gearbox and no synchronizers. And we learned to drive those properly, and they top out about 135. That was a real neat experience. Anyway, I did well enough in those introductory classes that I was invited back. About six months later. And so I was thrilled. I went back down to California and got to audition, if you will. And it was an all-day event. And at the end of the day, the guy that was looking, who owned the team and was looking for new talent, he was polite. He said, you drove well today. You really, really drove quite well. But we are looking for special. and you're not special. That's when I said, all right, Doug, time to go home and start, get real about life. And I was, at this time, I was 25, 26. So I was old, quote unquote, to be getting into serious motor racing anyway.
Now, did you also describe how this was a bit of a transition over into sport or performance motorcycling?
I guess it's just a continuation, if you will. Like I said, I was always fascinated. I liked the hot rods when I was growing up. Yeah. My pockets weren't deep enough to own a car when I was in high school, but I was always impressed. I'd walk through the student parking lot to see who's got whether it was a hot rod or maybe the latest, somebody had a GTO. Oh my gosh. that kind of thing. So, and I remember one kid, my class, he had a 1968 Plymouth Roadrunner. That was the first year they came out with a 383 and a four-speed, and it was a fast car in a straight line. And I didn't realize that Plymouth was building anything like the Roadrunner, and that became a very iconic supercar, if you will, over the years.
Oh yeah, that's the one with the wing and the Roadrunner cartoon character on the side.
Yep.
Right?
Yep. Well, those were the the one that you're talking about is the wing that was referred to as the Superbird, and it was manufactured to to be legal in NASCAR, and they only ran them 1 year in 1970, and NASCAR said, well, these wing cars are way too fast. We got to outlaw them, which is what they did. So the wing car that you're thinking of, the Superbird, was based upon a Roadrunner, but then it had a very long extended nose, and then also the very iconic high wing on the end of it.
Yeah.
And yes, they had the Roadrunner cartoon on the side of the car, and they had the beep beep horn.
Yeah.
It was all convincing.
Oh, that was just a thrill to see. I remember as a kid. I thought that was the coolest thing. I have two more questions for you, Doug. And I don't know which order to ask these in. So I'm going to let you choose which one you want to answer. Motorcycle instructor and also the leader for the Motorcycle Sport Touring Association. Which came first?
To be honest with you, I was certified. First time I was certified to teach motorcycle safety classes, the MSF, Motorcycle Safety Foundation, based out of Irvine, California. That was 2000. I joined the Motorcycle Sport Touring Association in 2000 of March, and I became a certified instructor May of 2000. Oh. And I also will share with you. In that training class, becoming a certified instructor, that's when I first met Chuck Hoffkamp.
Oh, yes, a mutual friend of ours, right?
And yeah, and a great all-around guy. Right. And we still got a relationship 23 years later.
Oh, that's cool. Well, you're clearly a people person, and I'll bet a heck of an instructor. I want to go through that program myself, but what? What thrills you? What about being a motorcycle instructor with a variety of students coming through? Some good, some bad, some that probably should not be on two wheels. Yeah. What are your reflections on life as a motorcycle instructor?
It is something that I've thoroughly enjoyed. I must confess, I have been teaching in some capacity since I was 18 years old. I was a lifeguard and a swimming instructor for 8 years, teaching people how to swim. My degree is in rhetoric and public address. Originally, I went to graduate school to become, I wanted to teach speech, like at a four-year college or JC level or something. But sadly, in the 1970s, nobody wanted speech teachers, so I had to go change that. But I have taught something throughout my life. I was with IBM for 28 years. 5 years of that, I was an instructor and course developer, teaching people how to repair IBM equipment. And I thoroughly enjoyed those 5 years. I got into teaching motorcycle safety, one, because I enjoyed teaching, and two, my motorcycles were becoming more and more expensive. And I needed some additional income so I wouldn't be impacting the household budget, if you will, buying tires or taking trips or buying motels or gasoline or whatever the case may be. And so I got into this teaching people how to ride safely and for the additional income, but really and truly to teach people or introduce people, if you will, to, as I said, my favorite mode of transportation. And I thoroughly enjoy it. This is my 24th year doing it. I still enjoy it. I must confess, I'm more tired at the end of the classes than I used to be. But it's a lot of fun, and there's some challenges. There are some interesting and different personalities that come through the classes, and you try and the curriculum itself is standardized, and you know what you have to teach, and it works as far as teaching people how to make the motorcycle go, stop, turn left, turn right, swerving, quick brakes. Quick braking, all that good stuff. It's not just getting the motorcycle to move. More importantly, we spend a lot of time on helping the people understand what to look for in traffic and where are what we like to refer to as traps. Recognize those early, and so that instead of having to react to something that's occurring in traffic, you've thought about this and you got time to respond rather than react immediately. And, you know, the whole aspect of looking for escape routes or things of that nature. have a couple of them available so that if things change, and they always do change when you're riding on public roads, you've got some outs based upon what some other motorist might do that they didn't think all the way through. But yeah. What I really enjoy is I do enjoy people. I do enjoy the interaction, telling them about what I, motorcycling and trying to convince them that, you'll like this too. But there have been occasions where folks got through the class and said, you know what? This is more effort than I want to put in. I'm going to keep driving my car or my truck or whatever. And that's good to know. And that's a good place to find that out, rather than going and buying a motorcycle and trying to teach yourself, or going through the class and realizing, you know what? I'm not going to ride that thing that's in my garage. It has become nothing but an expensive doorstop. So coming in and learning about the motorcycle class and working through it, that's a good approach before you go shopping.
Well, yeah, absolutely. You and I both know, I'm sure, individuals who have a 10-year-old motorcycle in the garage with 3,000 miles on it. Mm-hmm. You know, it sure seemed like fun at the time, but you know what? It's a little dangerous out there, and it's cold outside, and then it gets hot, and I think I'll do something else.
Yeah, that's all true.
As opposed to folks like you and me, we'll buy all the warm gear that it takes to ride when it's 15 degrees because it's just that much fun, right?
Yes. I ride year round. Yeah. I mean, there are some gorgeous days in January and February in Colorado.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
weird. And if it's 40 degrees or warmer, I'll go ride.
Yeah. Well, you and I living in the same town, we have a tremendous advantage, don't we? Where we can just head pretty much in any direction, avoiding Highway 25 in the Denver area, certainly when we can, but we can head in almost any other direction and find ourselves alone out there on a windy mountain road. And it's wonderful, isn't it?
Agreed.
So this is where we'll pause with part one of my interview with Doug Logsdon, and we'll continue on next week with a discussion about his involvement with the Motorcycle Sport Touring Association. So thank you so much, as always, for joining me today. If you enjoyed it, I appreciate you telling your friends. Until we meet again, I wish you peace. I wish you love.